Series 2, Episode 2.
Episode 3.
Episode 3.
Don't forget Fleur.
Oh, crikey.
Yeah.
It flies by, doesn't it? Episode 3. Indeed. Amazing. Normally I do the intro, but who's at the table today?
Well, we're very lucky to have a gentleman that's been in the country for over 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
He's a fitness, nutritionist, wellness expert, and good friend of the captain's table. And we'd like to introduce Mr. Greg Boucher. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Good to have you, mate.
Yeah, great to be here.
Yeah.
Really, yeah. Waiting for the call-up.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's great to have you on board, and we know you've got a good story, so we were just picking the right time to get that story. And
that would just happen to day. Be today.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. And normally the format is what we look at is to try and identify kind of what your background story is, mm-hmm. just a bit about you know, where you came from and how it's led you to be to Dubai today and the relevance of you being in Dubai. It's quite simple, though. We'll just intersperse it with crappy jokes and things like that. Mm. Not as the case may be, but that's pretty much it. So we'll get you to lead the way and just give us a potted history of, you know, where we're from in New Zealand and what makes you tick, and we'll take it from there.
Okay. Well, Bell Block, not many people know Bell Block in the Taranaki, just a little small town outside of New Plymouth. So that's where I was born and bred and brought up on a farm. So a lot goes back to my parents there on the upbringing of a kid on the farm and, you know, just loving the outdoor life and, you know, doing everything from racing motorbikes to push bikes. When the motorbikes got too expensive, we had to switch over to push bikes and, you know, going to school in bare feet and, you know, having to wait for the bus in the countryside and standing in cow dung, basically cow shit.
Yep.
You could say, just to keep the feet warm on your way to school. So
sounds like a pretty normal New Zealand upbringing.
Then. Sounds like a foot rot flat. Yeah. Flats, yeah, type thing.
Maybe, yeah. That's probably a true story there.
for farming community upbringing, certainly.
Yeah. So started there, and then my parents decided to move to Auckland. And as they were moving to Auckland, I was moving to university. So it was actually quite a good timing that after university, I moved onto Auckland to be with them and take up my sports and to continue sort of growing from there, you could say.
So if we talk about the sports, I mean, are you the typical 4x4 rugby player? Or I know that you have other sports, but maybe you could just tell us about how you got into the other sports and what it was like in New Zealand at the time.
Yeah, well, New Zealand, you get the best thing about it, which I always try and tell my kids now, is that we were so lucky because we get to try everything, you know. And my parents were always like, hey, this week we're going to do this. This season we're playing this. And we played everything in the summer. It was tennis. It was softball and a bit of cricket for the school. So, and then in the winter came around, you were playing rugby and my other sport, basketball, and kicked around with the first 11 football team as well, and got out on the soccer field. So I think having that upbringing and learning all those skills actually helped me when I had to go on to university, and then after university is choosing which sport you wanted to continue in. So at high school, I had to narrow it down to sort of one in the summer and one in the winter, which was basically tennis. I was playing tennis. I still managed to keep a little bit of cricket going when they called me up. And in the winter, I had to choose between rugby and basketball. So I chose basketball as my sport. You know, this white man could jump at the time and was pretty quick on the basketball court. So.
And did you feel a little bit ostracized by the community, having kind of, you didn't turn your back on rugby because I know you love it, but kind of the social obligation, you would have thought kind of like, well, you're not playing rugby this winter? Or?
Yeah, well, it was tough around your mates and that, but I always got called in for a game here and there, and there was always someone injured, so you always ended up actually playing. But to be actually saying that was your main sport going forward, I unfortunately had to make a decision. And at the same time, the high school I went to, Spotswood College, they had a very good volleyball team. They were one of the best volleyball teams in the country. So even though I didn't train with the volleyball team, I still went away to the tournaments to basically play and represent the college. So But in the end, went to university, and basically at university it had to be basketball.
So you went to Otago?
So first of all, was university, it was actually CIT in Wellington,
right.
Central Institute of Technology, and that was a one-year exercise science. I left school 1 year early, sixth form, and decided to start a little bit earlier than everybody else, and went down there and did a certificate in exercise science because I knew that sport was what I wanted to do, and if I couldn't play at a top level and be paid to play, then I knew I had to have something as a backup plan. So the good thing in New Zealand, they allow you to do that. I got a little scholarship to basically go and pursue that, and as long as I sort of was giving something back to the sport, you could say. So after CIT, which was a great time down there, out there at the tote, they called it. I still remember dollar drink nights, Wednesday nights.
Right.
Had some great guys playing and living with me down there. A couple of mates from New Plymouth actually went there with me. And we had guys like Bill Cavabati, who was, three
Big
or four
Bill.
Years older than me and playing for Wellington, and one of the big new props that was sort of coming through. And it was good to be mixing up with those guys as well.
Yeah.
So it was sort of a bunch of top athletes, you could say, from different sports, males and females, and all went to this university to...
And when would have been this bouch? Mid-90s?
1990. Yeah.
Wow, okay.
So 1990, and then... At the end of that, I just loved it so much, and we ended up going back to Auckland and pursuing my basketball and playing in the second division to start with for Auckland. And you know, went on to play first division basketball in Auckland, and managed to play with the North Harbour team, and did a stint with the Waikato Warriors at the time. And at the same time, unfortunately, I had to continue to do my certification, and I ended up going on to specialise a little bit further into sports science, and went to Otago University, and I was bouncing, flying in and out of Otago University and trying to do it extracurricularly, but at the same time hold down a job and play first division basketball, which was, you know, three days a week training, games every weekend, which was for half of the year.
She had pretty much a full dance card.
At the same time doing a full diploma in sports studies, which had business management, it had sports studies, and, you know, that was for another 3 years. So in all, it was a four-year certification, and at the end of that, I had to do an internship, which was probably one of the most interesting times for me, when I actually... got a placement at the Institute of Sport in New Zealand, which at the time was where all the top athletes were training. And the biggest claim to fame was basically training the Auckland-based All Blacks
right.
at the time. And a young gentleman named Dougie Howlett was sort of my protege at the time. And he was the guy that we had to bring through and train up. He was a great 100-meter sprinter, but didn't know how to move and change direction and kick and look after his body to continue to play for many, many years afterwards. So that was the start of obviously my first sort of part of my resume, you could say, to kick off what I do today. And that was sort of helped me probably all the way through to be able to get jobs and end up in countries.
And did it help Dougie Howlett? I mean, we know what the net result was. It was pretty good. But, there were clear results that came through from what you did.
Yeah.
Did that happen in time, or were there lots of low hanging fruit and things happened quickly?
No, it's he put in a lot of hard work. He was one of those guys that was looking after his body. He was a very, very clean the way he ate and lived at home with his parents and trained as hard as he could and crafted his skill, you could say, to be the player he ended up being. And that's a testament to his hard work,
exactly.
Putting in that effort back in those days, because a lot of people still, you know, steak and eggs for breakfast and, just turning up on to train, and they weren't doing the extra training to look after their bodies and play the way that the game's gone today.
It was sort of a transition at that point, wasn't it, from the old Colin Mead sort of way of running up hills and stuff to going to the gym.
Yeah.
Gym workouts
just weren't known. And, you know, another guy by the name of Jonah Lomu.
Right.
We took him for his first weight training session when he was at Wesley College, and just a natural guy in the gym, but had never lifted a weight before the age of, 17, 18. And you know, the kids are doing that now these days at 15, 16, you know, even younger.
Yeah, sure.
Which is what wasn't heard of in those days.
Do you think it's you can be too young to be lifting weights?
No, I think there's the different types of weight training, you could say. Right. So it's more about obviously strength lifting and powerlifting, where you're putting your body under enormous stress and your ligaments and your tendons under enormous stress is not recommended for people that are still growing, because it messes up with your epiphyseal plates, which is where your bones are, are growing from. So the key thing for those, what we say to those kids is really get strong.
Yeah,
you know, get an all-round sort of fitness going on, but don't be lifting so heavy that you could end up doing damage that stops your growth plates and or stops you from growing.
Right.
Yeah.
So Institute of Sport, then what's it, we're about? What year are we about now?
So this was up to 1995, 96. Yep. Still playing Division One basketball right up until. Yep. I met this girl in the gym, and I was running a couple of clubs there in Auckland, the swim gym clubs.
Yeah.
I finished my certification and was now managing two of the top swim gym complexes in New Zealand, which had basically Olympic training swimming pools, it had fitness clubs, it had aerobic studios. A lot of the New Zealand top swimmers were training there. We were putting them through their training routine in the gym. We had a lot of the top rugby guys that lived in the area that were training there in the off season. Dougie was training there as well. And basically, you know, I met this girl who's now my wife,
Rania
at the time. So she, you know, we were dating and I was playing basketball, and basically she got an offer at the time to go for an interview in Auckland. And this is in 1998. And they invited 300 people to go along to this interview, and they picked people that were multilingual and were models at the time, and she was doing a little bit of that on the side in New Zealand, and she rocked up. It was a Emirates recruiting for Dubai, and they ended up picking three candidates from that interview, and she was one of them, and she said, I really want to do this, and it's a way for me to see the world. It's a way that I can elope from my mum and dad and get a little bit more serious if you're interested in doing this long distance thing, and you know, I'm going to head over there.
Right.
I was like, okay.
Were you like, Dubai, where's an atlas, where's a map, or?
You know, and then we sort of looked, oh, geez, it's in the Middle East, there's a war going on over there right now,
Iraq,
what's happening here and there, but obviously she's from Lebanon originally, so she's sort of familiar with the countries and familiar with the area, and she didn't have any qualms about it at all. So off she goes, 1998, off she goes, and then 6 months into the trip over there, she goes, you've got to come over.
It's amazing.
I said, look, I can't come over now. I'm in the middle of my season. At the end of the season, I'll come over and have a bit of a holiday, eh? And I jacked up a little trip around the world and stopped in Dubai to see her. And while I was here for, I think, two and a half weeks, and sort of rolled up.
And what were your impressions of the place when you first pitched up here? Did you have expectations, or?
Well, I knew it was old, and it was dearer. There was a little bit of Dubai. You know, it was sort of it wasn't much there, to be honest. She was living in the Pink Tower on Sheikh Zayed Road, which is still there today. And basically, she took me out and did me all the touristy things. You know, the museums and the creeks and what have you. And it was really nice. It was sort of a different culture change, but did I see myself sort of living here and doing it? I probably had to think twice about it, because I was sort of in holiday mode, you know. We're doing everything holiday. But what she did, she was off on a layover trip, I think it was to France at the time, and she said, while I'm away, I've jacked up three interviews for you.
Right.
I was like, what? She goes, yeah, I've been putting your CV out to all these places to see if there's a chance that you could come over here. I was like, oh, okay. So let's go. So I rocked up to the three interviews, and one of the interviews basically said, look, we really like you, and here's an offer. We'd like you to come back and run a chain of fitness clubs for us.
In Dubai.
Right. So this was basically a company that never had gone into gyms before, and in fact,
was gyms a thing here then?
No, there was no gyms. It was basically hotels that had a gym. So to be a five-star hotel, you had a little gym. So everyone was going to a gym, but it was at a hotel.
Sure.
So there was no commercial gyms, and they wanted to be the first
pay and play
gym that ran it like a gym. Had to be a profit center.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So went home, had to talk to my family about it. I still had another year on my basketball contract. I had to renege the last year of my basketball contract, but I said, yeah, hey, I'm keen to give it a go. So sort of went back home.
And what did Dennis and Carol say initially?
Greg, you need to go see the world.
Oh, you know, good. That's great.
My dad was, which was tracking back to my 21st birthday, in fact, he said to me, and he gave all me and my brothers a globe, and he gave us a ticket, and he gave us a key, which is typical in New Zealand on your 21st birthday. The key is, it's a key to your house. You're always welcome to come home again. Here's the key to the house, and you're always welcome to come home. But here's a globe, which I still have on my desk in my office today, and here's a round the world ticket. Son, go see the world. Because they were big believers in, you know, think globally and act locally was Dad's big saying.
Two brothers. Dylan
and Richie. Yep.
And everybody's done that anyway.
They've all done it. Yep, we all did it. And it wasn't scary for us to leave and go and venture the world. It was only, you know, I sort of said to Mum and Dad, hey, it's a three-year stint. It's a three-year contract.
I'll be home before you know it.
Yet another one of our guests saying that they came here for 2 or 3 years and they've been here for 20.
I'll be home soon.
That was crazy. And basically, you know, sort of rocked up, 1999, rocked up, and the guy said, right, we need this gym open in 6 months. Yeah. I was like, holy shit, you know, where am I going to recruit these people from? I have to bring in the equipment, find the location, put the marketing together. They didn't even have a logo, they didn't have a name, they had nothing. So it was basically for 6 months, head down, bum up, and, you know, grafting to train up trainers. So I bought in training systems to train up these trainers. Lucky I knew enough that I was lecturing and training trainers that I could train these people up. I had to bring most of the trainers in from overseas to bring a whole expat international crew in, because we were running everything from cafes to basically a pro shop. We're selling everything from supplements and that to a group exercise studio to a PT area, and trying to bring in latest and greatest. So 6 months, recruited a great team, got them on board. Within 9 months, I returned the investment for the owners.
Perfect.
It was crazy, and I've never seen it sort of happen that quickly again. People were traveling from Alain and Abu Dhabi to come and experience the classes and come and hang out and just feel the atmosphere.
And who was joining? Was it locals? Was it expats? Who? Everybody.
It was everyone. It was like we had
men, women.
I recruited, you know, I did my recruiting properly. We had good looking reception girls that were part of a modeling agency. I had personal trainers that could train you know, anyone, and a lot of the locals were coming in and they were really getting involved in it and loved it because they wanted to train. And bodybuilding is still a big part of the society over here, and we're going to a gym, and we had a great bodybuilding area with these latest free weights and all these zones, and we had a cardiovascular zone with these TVs at the time that you could change the channel and listen in, which no one had sort of seen at that time. And then we brought in all their group fitness systems from Les Mills in New Zealand and that as well, which is, you know, again, for that group fitness studio to be going like that, we had people on a waiting list. So we had 60 people in a class and we had 10 people outside waiting to try and get in the next class.
I think Les Mills is going to come in a few times within our discussion. Your relationship with Les Mills was from there, but did you have you were with the Les Mills, but when you're in New Zealand, you had nothing to do with them when you're in New Zealand.
I did a little stint there just to get a bit of experience on the floor in Auckland, but there was nothing. The pay wasn't very good, and I could make better money doing other things.
So your relationship started from here.
So no, that was the start of, you could say, my era with the guys there,
and a huge success. I mean, did you manage to maintain the momentum? And that must have been quite difficult to keep that going. Yeah. Not in terms of carrying on with the business, but in terms of mentally and like thinking, well, what's the next challenge or what am I going
to
do?
Yeah, well, that was the stepping stone, right? So that was, they wanted to open the second one. So we got the second one open. I recruited a manager to come in and manage the club so I could then look at the business development side of the other side of the business. So they also had an import-export business where they were importing nutrition products and fitness equipment at the time. And the equipment that we were using in the club was their brands that they didn't bought in. So they said, look, Greg, we love what you've done in the gyms, but we want you to look after the big baby now, which is the distribution business. And so I basically jumped across there for the last year and a half and basically started running the, you know, retail stores. So we rebranded the retail stores, and then we changed the distribution business and basically started bringing in more brands and actually distributing to the wider community in terms of GCC countries. So it taught me that business of distribution, you could say.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what year are we now? We're in
So this is 2003.
2003. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So So Dubai is just starting to, things are starting to grow.
Marina's starting pumping, you know. Marina wasn't there yet. No, it wasn't there yet. Sheikh Zayed Road was pumping.
The springs, the meadows were starting being built.
Just coming
big
up.
Big plans. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was the start of our, obviously, first dibs into buying property over here. Sure. We got an off plan with the Springs property, and that was a good venture as well to get an off plan there and get our first property, which was a good success. And living in your own house and you know, having your own back garden and that sort of thing, it was a bit of a hit with the parties and people like you to come over for a barbie.
Well, it makes you a firm fixture of Dubai, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you feel as though your roots have really kind of been put in deep with when you purchase a place. And that's a huge difference as well.
Yeah, it was just, we knew that we were, you know, there was something else after that, because we'd sort of been getting headhunted by people left, right and centre, you know, to come and do other facilities. And that was obviously the birth of MeFit Pro at the time.
So at that stage, at that 2003, you said, okay, I want to do this myself.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's when the contract finished with the guys.
Yeah.
I got paid out of my shareholding in terms of what I got, what was on the contract, because the contract was just a great contract. And in fact, the best thing about the contract was my three jobs in New Zealand basically were the same as the one contract that I got over here, plus the trip home and all the perks at the time with that. And Rania decided to pack up and leave Emirates at the time, because at the same time she fell pregnant and we had a baby. Kiana was born in 2001. So that sort of happened fairly quickly 2 years into the stint of it. And that sort of allowed us to sort of say, you know what, if we're going to stay around here, let's set up our own business and company and help everyone in the industry rather than actually just be focused on one gym, you know. So that was the kickoff.
MeFit Pro came, and the initial strategy of MeFit Pro was?
We were going to distribute the Les Mills products. That was Rania's baby at the time, and she wanted to distribute the Les Mills systems around other clubs and be a trainer for them, and being able to open up more facilities or work with other clubs that were running that wanted to run the Les Mills system within the clubs.
And of course, in the meantime, you obviously, starting off the trend with private pay and pay gyms, they were popping up all over the place.
More and more were popping up, and obviously we're pitching not just the equipment to them. We're also pitching the group fitness systems to them. Mm. And one of the other big things we did was train the trainers. So we brought in the personal training certifications, and I was lecturing, training the trainers at the time and giving them certifications, so we could also recruit locally and rather than having to bring everyone in all the time. So.
Mm.
And that was always a big thing of ours, is to train them up to the level that we wanted them to.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so that just increased through 2003, 2004 to the size of...
Just kept growing. So one brand, I got into the nutrition side of the business where we bought nutrition brands in, and, you know, one brand grew to two brands and then those companies sort of put your earmarks out there and say, we really like what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Are you interested in opening up and bringing in more brands? So it sort of started accumulating to what it is today, where we have around about 42 brands in the business.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously certification side of the business, so five different channels in the company.
And it increased to a level that just before pandemic, you were able to go online as well.
Yeah, well, that was a big it was a big change. We were mainly a B2B business, so it was mainly business to business. Any clubs that were opening up, we were selling equipment to them, selling nutrition products to the distributors and to the pharmacies and all that sort of thing. And, you know, we decided at the time that, you know, we have to be going, this online thing is just going crazy around the world. So about 2 years ago now, we started investing in this business to go online, and we were looking at a name, and we decided on Kua, which in Arabic stands for strength. And we said, right, let's venture into that market. And lucky enough, not knowing that COVID was just around the corner, that we had started doing B2C business. And basically at the time, when COVID shut came in, we were doing 25 orders a day just online. And that grew to, during the lockdown, up to 250, 300 orders a day were coming in. So it was just good timing that we had that already set up, because if you were trying to start that during the lockdown, it would have just been
impossible.
Yeah.
And gyms now, we're coming out of the pandemic, are they coming back? Are people returning to the gyms?
Yeah, I think obviously the big thing is a lot of people bought equipment for their homes and started equipping beautiful gyms and studios in their houses, which is great. But
and they're thinking this
the,
is...
People are continuing to, you know, add knickknacks to them. But yeah. I think what people miss by going to the gym is the, we say, community,
yeah.
and motivation, you know.
Sure.
A good coach, although, you know, you have good online coaches and coaches that can come to your house, is going to a gym and getting that atmosphere and... just being in the game where you walk in, you do your workout and you're out, you know, work out,
yep.
you know, so yeah, but while you're there, you're being motivated, you've got a great coach, you've got a lot of different equipment and you're also exercising with your friends. People miss that. And that's why I think gyms will always be successful. And even, you know, after the COVID and the lockdowns happen, people go back to the gyms because they don't get that at home.
Right.
You know?
Okay.
People will still exercise at home, I think 1 or 2 days a week maybe, but then they'll go to the gym 2 or 3 days a week to get that.
To do some classes.
And get some classes done.
And, I mean, as Dubai's grown, it seems to be, and the gymnasiums have grown with it, and there seems to be a lot. Is there too many in this town at the moment?
That's a good question.
Thank you very much
yeah.
for practicing that word. Yeah.
Look, there's not really, to be honest, because there's a massive growth opportunity. Right
yep.
now, there's only 5.5% of the population go to a gym.
Right.
If you compare that to the global numbers, and if you compare that to developed countries like New Zealand, Australia, Scandinavia, the US, you know, they're between 17 and 25% of the population go to a gym. So all I say to the competitors out there and say the guys that are competing head to head with opening gyms is saying, hey guys, all we need to do is lift the participation rate by 1 or 2%.
Yeah, right.
You know, Kuwait, which is a mecca of fitness now with a lot of gyms, they're at 8.5.
Wow.
And then if UAE got from 5.5 to 8.5,
sure. That's so interesting.
It needs another, you know, 1,000 clubs, you could say, you know, in the market. So right now there's only around, you know, 600 odd clubs.
And sadly, quite a few of them will have fallen by the wayside, I guess.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. So some of them have struggled. You know, the ones that were, you know, the ones that struggle the most are probably more the boutique ones where they were limited with numbers. They
sure.
rely on class numbers to go. But the big boys are still there. They're, they're chomping through on it to get them through. It's obviously limited with the number of people going in, but at the same time, people are coming back now. And all we need to do is get more people exercising.
Sure.
You know, with the obesity rates, the diabetes issues over here in the country, exercise is a key part of that.
So and nutrition.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So, should we talk about so, the elephant in the room? So you'll last week we had owner of Crush TV Ian Ohan in here, right? And after the podcast finished, we were talking about his brands. One of his brands being Salad Jar.
Yeah.
And we suggested. What did I think we suggested?
I suggested. And I felt a bit guilty jumping off the back.
We love Salad Jar, and if we could, if we tried Salad Jar for a year, now he was so excited he jumped on board too. So, between the three of us and Ted, we're now eating Salad Jar for a month. Three of those a month, which each are 500 calories. As a nutritionist, tell us, are we making a mistake? Is this good? Is this bad? What is good?
Let's see what's in it first. But obviously, the key thing about it is, and probably the main thing that I, the main thing that you have to think about, and for everyone these days, is go back to the basics, you know, at the end of the day, is calories in versus calories out. So, if you look at your macros, you look at what you're doing and whether that's, you know, you can look at different things, whether your body consumes and runs on carbs as a fuel. Does it run on fat? Does it run on, you know, protein? And, you know, you've got to look at the way your body's made up, but also your hereditary as well. There's a lot to that that goes into it. But at the end of the day, the basics are, you know, you've got to burn more calories a day than you actually put in. Then you're actually going to be either losing weight or gaining weight based on where that's going to go. And I think when you look at options like this, and there's a lot of food companies out there today, the quality of these products and look at the ingredients in there, it's great quality. And it's, you know, you're eating good quality food. It's not processed. It's, you know, it's natural. You can't really go wrong, to be honest. And if you're able to count those macros correctly. And then you also, with the fancy watches we all wear today, you guys wear the same one.
That's your like. Garmin. Garmin's good. How many calories
have we burnt? It's the first day it's been on for.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But it's going in the right direction. I have to say, we've been going for about 5 or 6 days. We've probably lost about the same amount of weight, which when you're not imbibing as well as eating, I mean, I've lost about 4.5 kgs or 5 kgs without really trying too hard. And that's really without ramping up the exercise as well, so as a combined effort. It's really not that difficult. It's just, Obi-Wan would say, what is it about?
Consistency.
There we go.
Well, let's see. We'll report back during the month how this goes. A question just to what we were going back earlier. You work closely with the leadership of the country in relation to fitness and projects and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I know they're very much involved in improving wellness, etc., for the country. What are they saying? Where do they want to see Dubai going to?
Look, they're very proactive about what they want to do. They want to be seen as the best. They want to be making sure that we've got the best facilities. They want to make sure that what's on offer here is equal for everybody as well, that they are providing solutions like the cycle tracks, like the running tracks, like the beautiful things you get here that you probably don't see in many other countries, that they're investing in people's health, they're investing in fitness to be as a place that you can go as a destination, that you can keep fit.
Which we take for granted as well, by the way. And I think that's it sounds quite lousy, actually, because if we all went back to our respective original homes and wanted to jump in a car for 15 or 20 minutes and then get on a fantastic purpose-built outdoor cycling track that takes, for hundreds of kilometres, it just doesn't exist. And yet we just almost take it for granted here, and it's an incredible thing.
Yeah, well, they did a great thing during the lockdown as well. If you look what's happened in France and in Germany and in the UK, for example, where they shut the clubs and, it was a struggle to get them open. These guys said, you know what, we need these clubs open for people's mental, not just the physical, but the mental health as well to, get people back out there exercising as long as you're doing it safe. And they come to us and say, guys, can you give us some research? And it's always research led. Can you give us some research to say that going to the gym is safe? And if you can give me that research and you're showing me what good countries are doing, then we'll keep them open.
Right.
But if you can't give me that research to say that it's not going to be detrimental for the health of people or for the country, then we'll lock them up a little bit, So they've been good about it. And I think we have to be very lucky about what we've been able to continue to do over here compared to some of the other countries where, there's more problems happening over there because clubs are being locked down and they're not opening the doors again.
Can you last at that before the doors are closed permanently?
You can't, the rents and, unless there's subsidies by the government and that type of thing, you're not going to be able to last.
Sure. So Method Pro, successful company, going well, got your brands running. Where do you see the future?
Look, I love wellness. We love health. We love fitness. It's a family thing now. Two children, both doing it. One of the big things is one of my goals in life was to actually play sport with my kids and, at a good level. And I'm so lucky that I can play touch rugby with my two, with Kiki and Keanu. We play at a good level. We play in the top league over here and we compete globally. As a family, we play basketball together and a competitive team. So one of the big things for me personally was quality of life. And by being healthy, being fit, playing sport allows me to do the things I really love doing. And that's my stress relief. I go out and play sports. So apart from the business side of things is a goal in life is to continue to live healthy and keep moving. Because as soon as you stop moving, you seize up and all sorts of bad things happen. Get the calories out versus calories in so you can enjoy the beautiful food and the great feasts that we have and refreshments that we do get into, so that's one thing. Also I love the property side of the business and we've been lucky enough to invest in a few properties and that sort of thing. There's a couple of new ventures coming on where MeFit Pro are launching into now in the digital space and this type of thing with the way that fitness is moving. So we'll continue to evolve MeFit Pro and We've got a great team on there right now that will continue to grow the business, and hopefully that can allow me to step out and look at where the industry is going. Mm. What are we going to do next? Is it opening our own gyms and that type of thing? Probably not, but it's more of where we can support the industry and continue to bring in the world's leading brands. Again, going back to what my dad said, thinking globally, acting locally. So when you see something happening that's really good, how do we bring that and bring it into this region? So that's really a key thing. There's a couple of new sort of investments that we've got bubbling on the side a little bit. Mm-hmm. I've opened and I was an investor in the basketball hub here in Dubai, which is my sport, obviously basketball. Mm-hmm. I wanted to give something back to the basketball community. So there's a tribe, it's called the Dubai Tribe, and, mm-hmm. and a basketball hub, which is a fully fledged basketball stadium, and where we coach kids, we run leagues, we do fitness sessions there, and that's a great initiative.
And when you talk about basketball over here, is it pretty much mixed nationality? I know it's very popular with the Philippines out here.
Yeah.
Are you getting a real mix of people coming in and playing?
To be honest, it's a major sport in the Arab region. You know, the Lebanese love it. It's one of their main sports. The Jordanians, they're also very, very good at it. But also the locals, all the big Al Wassels, the Al Nassers, and big sporting clubs that they have here, basketball is a key staple of their sport. Obviously, football's number one, but tied for a close second, third is probably basketball, being in those clubs. So the players are paid to play over here. Yeah. It's a great league. And then you have all the mix of expatriates, you know, from the Eastern Europeans, who, again, basketball's huge over there, the Americans that live here. Mm. Or even a few Aussies and Kiwis mix it up in the basketball circles. So then you've got the Asian guys coming through as well. So and the Filipinos, they love it. They absolutely love it. So it's a growing sport here, and even in New Zealand and Australia, it's one of the fastest growing sports still, because it allows, you know, the rugby's getting a bad rap with the head injuries and the concussions and that sort of thing. Basketball's continuing to flourish because it's a sport that requires multi-skilled, and people just enjoy playing it. You don't have to be a big man, you know.
No, good fitness. Just want to quickly go back to online, to what you were saying before, digitalization. Quite big in the US, I believe, with cycle training and things like that, where you're actually looking at a screen and your instructor's online and maybe teaching 10,000 people.
Mm.
Is this going to be the end of instructors?
Not really, no. Instructors, people love that live thing.
Right.
They love it live, you know, and instructors could be those guys on the screen. So they are still being employed by these big digital companies to be online, teaching classes online to thousands of people.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's less people doing it, but I don't think it will ever take it away from the live experience that people have.
Sure.
You know, it's like going to a concert. You know, we call it the entertainment.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like going to rock concerts or going to a live DJ party or something like that. Is it the same experience of watching it on TV?
Yeah,
it's the different atmosphere, and that's probably what you can liken it to. Is you know, going to a class where you've got the instructor in front of you, you've got the CrossFit classes where the instructor is motivating you and pushing you.
Yeah,
to try and do that off a TV or off a big screen, is you're not going to get the same motivation, and that's where our industry is. It's called the motivation industry, and you motivate people to come in, you motivate them while they're there, and then you're going to motivate them outside to come back and see you again. Mm. Whether that's talking about your nutrition or whether that's talking about your exercise, it's a big motivation thing.
And I will say, you're a good motivator when you're up there on the pushing your heart. We've got to do Greg's classes.
I'll do that.
Yeah, there's generally a leak in the roof when I do it because there is a big pool of water underneath my bike. But thank you so much, Greg, for coming in today. I've learned a lot.
Mate, it's been awesome. Yeah. I didn't know half of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good. We didn't get into any other stories, you know.
That can be another time, but no.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Cool, guys. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And I love your shirt, by the way.
Oh, yeah. We didn't talk about that, did we?
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's great to see. And this is your shirt's very nice too, Rex.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I love it.
So this is.
We'll keep you posted about that.
We'll keep you posted about the shirt.
Awesome.
Thank you.